Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Text 15, Canto 4, Chapter 14. Dharma acharita kumsam. Vānanakāya buddhibhi Lokān viśokān vitarati Atānantyam asaṅginām Dharma acharita kumsām Vānanakāya buddhibhi Lokān viśokān vitarati Atān nantyām asaṅginām Dharmaha. Religious principles. Ācharitaha. Executed. Pungsam. Two persons. Vak. By words. Manaha. Mind. Kaya. Body. Bodhibhi. And by intelligence. Lokan. The planets. Vishokan. Without misery. Vitarati. Bestow. Attaha. Certainly. Anantyam. Unlimited happiness and liberation. Asanginam. To those free from material influence. Translation. Those who live according to religious principles and who follow them by words, mind, body, and intelligence are elevated to the heavenly kingdom, which is devoid of all miseries, being thus rid of the material influence, they achieve unlimited happiness in life. Purport. The saintly sages herein instruct that the king or head of government should set an example by living a religious life, as stated in Bhagavad Gita. Religion means worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which should not simply make a show of religious life, but should perform devotional service perfectly with words, mind, body, and good intelligence. By so doing, not only will the king or government head rid himself of the contamination of the material modes of nature, but the general public will also, and they will all become gradually elevated to the kingdom of God and go back to Godhead. The instructions given herein serve as a summary of how the head of government should execute his ruling power and thus attain happiness, not only in this life, but also in the life after death. I'm going to read the next verse because it's with this. This is the injunction, the other is the prohibition, the do and do not, and they connect, and it's very short also. Text 16. The sages continued, O great hero, for this reason, you should not be the cause of spoiling the spiritual life of the general populace. If their spiritual life is spoiled because of your activities, you will certainly fall down from your opulent and royal position. Purport. Formerly, in practically all parts of the world, there were monarchies. But gradually, as monarchy declined from the ideal life of religion to the godless life of sense gratification, monarchies all over the world were abolished. However, simply abolishing monarchy and replacing it with democracy is not sufficient unless the government men are religious and follow in the footsteps of great religious personalities. So here we are again, going over the duties of a king. So many places in the Bhagavatam, the duties of a king are identified. And several parts to this, there's qualities, there's behaviors, something like that discussion that we're having in text 3 of Nectar of Instruction. There's things that enhance bhakti, shadhir, bhaktir, prasidhyati. Some of them are qualities and some of them are behaviors or activities. So here also, there's, for a king, there are behaviors and there are qualities. So he should execute the behaviors. Follow religious principle. Don't neglect religious principles, so do and do not. And then the qualities, he's leading, his mood is protecting his citizens, and the protection of the citizens is not just, I've got a big army and I'm a powerful guy. That's one kind of protection, like the thieves and the rogues kind of protection. But it's also, as we've been discussing, protecting from lower tendencies, and instead leading towards higher tendencies, leading towards elevation of consciousness by following the principles of Dharma. So that's what exactly is being said. Dharma acharita pungsam. Acharita means executed, by carrying out the duties of Dharma. How? There's four items mentioned. Van or vak means speech. Mana, the mind. Kaya, your body. That pretty much covers everything. But there's one more. So what you say, what you think, what you do, and then buddhihi, or buddhibihi, by proper intelligence. So intelligence is needed to guide all three of those. Just as a reminder that this utsahan quality, the quality of enthusiasm, such a nice, short, one-sentence definition. Prabhupada speaks, gives a definition of intelligence, a definition of enthusiasm, is endeavoring with intelligence in Krishna consciousness, is enthusiasm. So it's something different than passion. Passion is, there's a carrot, go chase the carrot. Strive to gain something through activity, fruitive activity. That's not the definition of transcendental enthusiasm that enhances bhakti. And similarly, the indication here is, there are things that one should do, but one should do them with proper intelligence. Meaning, discrimination. What's the goal? Not only do something, but do something, do the right thing in the right way. That's important. It's a stage of, I can launch into a whole discussion, but it's a sign of maturity in Krishna consciousness, that not only you do the right thing, but you do it in the right way. So it's one thing to even know what the right thing is, and then it's another thing to do the right thing, and then it's another thing to do the right thing the right way. I really like this topic, so I'm going to speak a little bit about it. But this is, what's behind it is intelligence. And the mature stage of intelligence is gifted by Krishna. You can't fudge it or pretend it or, go take a university course or buy some at Walmart. It's something that Krishna gives.
the example that is one example that's presented in the Bhagavatam is right at the very beginning of the discussion of Krishna Katha. That's, you know, chapter 7. Chapter 7 of Canto 1. Where all the other prior presentation is the essence of the Bhagavatam and how the Bhagavatam appears and Narada's instructions to Vyasa about compiling the Bhagavatam and what should be in it. And then he compiles it. And he teaches it to Shukadev. And Shukadev learns it. And then the question comes, why did Shukadev, who was already liberated, bother to study anything? Don't you study something when you're missing out on something? And he was already Brahman realized, so why did he bother studying something? And then the answer is the Atmaram verse. Even the liberated souls are interested in Srimad Bhagavatam because it is Paramahamsa literature. Meaning, the message of the Bhagavatam is transcendental. It's not like how you can get something that you don't have, fruit of activity. And I'll connect this with this verse also, or this little section. Because the advice of the king, the advice to the king is, do this so you get something. It's karmakanda. The argument is, it's not devotional service. It's karmakanda. Do your duty because by doing your duty, you'll get something. You'll prosper, you'll have a nice kingdom, citizens will be happy, you'll be doing good deeds, and et cetera, et cetera. If you don't do it, you're in the penalty box. You'll lose your kingdom, you'll lose your opulence. So it's a karmakanda argument, but above the karmakanda argument of whole karmakanda literature is the Bhagavatam. It's transcendental. So we'll go back to this. So after this Atmarama verse, where Shukadeva is explained, the reason that Shukadeva Goswami was interested in Srimad Bhagavatam is it's transcendental literature. It's beyond the modes of nature. It's beyond fruit of activity. It's beyond anything material. And he was keen to hear it because he wasn't interested in anything material. He was very interested in Srimad Bhagavatam. It's transcendental literature. And then comes a question right after that. The sages say, well, Krishna Katha, if the Bhagavatam is Krishna Katha, give us some Krishna Katha. So the very first Krishna Katha that's told is this particular example of doing the right thing in the right way. And it's the person being spoken about is Arjuna. So the little description is Ashvatthama, who is the son of, who is he the son of? Drona. Drona's son. Ashvatthama goes into the tent of the sons of the Pandavas and cuts their head off with his sword and brings the five heads to Duryodhana. Even Duryodhana finds it disgusting. And Ashwatthama runs for his life. Draupadi finds out in the morning the children have been killed. Arjun comes and takes a vow. I'm going to capture Ashwatthama and I'm going to bring him back. And when you're performing the funeral for your sons, you can stand on his head as you're offering oblations into the fire. He takes a vow. I'm going to get him. And he chases after Ashvatthama. It's very exciting. Ashvatthama turns and releases the Brahmastra weapon. Arjuna is bewildered. Krishna tells him what to do. And the counter weapon and the Brahmastra is neutralized. He captures Ashvatthama, brings him back before Draupadi, holding his hair, sword raised, ready to chop off his head. And Draupadi says, don't do it. And his elder brother says, don't do it. He would never disobey his brother. I've taken a vow. Draupadi says, I release you from the vow. You took the vow on my behalf, I release you from the vow. So he's not bound by the vow anymore. Don't do it. And Bhima says, do it. Kill him. And Krishna says, kill him. So he's got all these different voices of people saying different things. He has taken a vow. And Ashvatthama is punishable by Dharma for murder, I mean, merciless murder. He's fit to be punished by death penalty. And you know what death penalty says according to the Madhu Samhita. It releases that person from the sin of having killed. Otherwise he'll have to suffer incredibly and then eventually be killed anyways. So better to release him from that reaction by capital punishment. And then Krishna gives another argument that says, don't think that you'll incur a reaction because you're killing a brahmana, because what he's done, although he's born as a brahmana, he's not qualified as a brahmana because of this heinous act. It's obviously he's not qualified as a brahmana. So you're released from any reactions for your killing him. So now, what to do? It's really beautiful. It's Prabhupada explains in the purport that Krishna wanted to demonstrate, just see how qualified is Arjuna. So he set up the whole thing. I mean, let's expand five children so we can show that Arjuna is qualified. But you know, the conflict in which he was placed of what do you do? Do, not do, you know, it's going to disappoint somebody, and you know, what's how to discern the right course of action. You ever been in that place before? What's the right course of action? If you're Krishna conscious, Krishna will instruct you. So Arjuna is Krishna conscious, and he did the right thing. He punished Ashvatthama, but he did it in such a way that Draupadi would not be upset, and his elder brother would not be upset, and Krishna would be pleased. And you know, how do you please everybody? If you're Krishna conscious, then at least in this case, Arjuna didn't decapitate him, but he humiliated him. He went for one who has been honored, dishonors worse than death. He treated him in such a way that he was totally humiliated. He cut off all his hair except a few little patches and sent him off. You're banished. So that's like really extreme. But it's a test of maturity. Not only to do the right thing, but do the right thing in the right way. Because right thing in the right way means, part of it is, you consider how is this act, which is the right act, going to impact on other people? How will they, other people, be affected by my doing the right thing? And that will help you understand how to do the right thing in the right way. Because we're not like machines that are isolated from others. We're social beings in the company of others. So doing the right thing can be challenging, and it's really challenging to do the right thing when you're contemplating how is this thing going to affect other people, positively, negatively. It's delicate. It requires intelligence. It requires buddhi-bihi. It requires spiritual intelligence that we know from Bhagavad Gita, 10th chapter, text 10. Krishna gives that buddhi. No, text 11. Krishna gives the dami buddhi yogam tam yena mam upi antite. That's where you get it. Krishna. So that takes, now back to the verse, it takes the karmakanda rituals to a whole other level, like, you know, doing the right thing, following religious codes. That's dharma. And then dharma that's driven by the higher purpose, the ultimate purpose of doing the right thing. That's buddhibihi. It's not some other kind of discrimination, like discriminating right from wrong. It's the higher purpose is to be achieved. Like Krishna says, it's a principle that Krishna discusses in Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna. Really simple. Perform your prescribed duty and what else? Always think of me. So how do you always think of Krishna? It's by being attached to Krishna. Whatever it is that you're attached to, you think of. Somebody may be sitting at their desk in their office, and by their office they have a little picture of their family or their children. On their computer screensaver or on their phone, and you'll say, "This is for whom I'm here sitting in this office, is my family members. I'm working to fulfill my duties to them." I mean, that's where that attachment goes. Then there's the bigger picture, that how do I fulfill that duty properly? It's to help bring them to Krishna. So then Krishna's in the picture. And I'm working for Krishna. And part of my service to Krishna is these part and parcel of Krishna living entities, and serving them in some way that helps them come to Krishna. So wherever you're attached to, that's where your thoughts will go. So, manaha. So, vak, your speech, your mind, your actions, guided by spiritual intelligence, buddhi. So, within the verse, that's written on the board here, one can see it in terms of the karmakanda duty, or more specifically, the transcendental way of life. But King Vena isn't about, you know, he doesn't have the capacity to do anything about transcendental life. He's just like, they're trying to get him off track, onto track with his duties. And so that's what to do. And then there's, you know, the benefits if he does. Lokan vitarati. Excuse me. Lokan vishokan vitarati. Vitarati means bestow. So you do this and it will bestow nice things. Anantyam, unlimited happiness. Well, it's not exactly unlimited happiness, but, you know, a little pumping up the virtue of karmakanda ritual, karmakanda performance of duty as you go to the heavenly planets, where compared to here, this any happiness here is puny. And there is big. So he's calling it, or they're calling it, unlimited happiness. It's not unlimited happiness. It's limited happiness. In fact, it's illusory happiness. Illusory happiness in several senses. One is, now you see it, now you don't. And it's not unlimited because it's just based upon the senses and sense contact. Sparsha ja, contacting the senses It's contacting the object of the senses with the senses. It's just, you know, better model of senses and better assortment of sense objects. But it's not really happiness at all. It's illusory happiness. And it's not unlimited. It's now you see it, now you don't happiness. That's a little exaggeration. And asanginam. Asanginam. Sangha means association. So the reference is association with the modes of nature. And it's being described as the stage of liberation. Well, it's not the stage of liberation. It's above. Maybe you're out of this jail and you're in that jail. You have a first-class jail cell. But it's not liberation. Liberation is something else. But it's at least liberation from the sufferings of things that go on in this plane. Well, except for the core ones, birth, death, disease, and old age, and the heavenly planets, that's also there. And the modes of nature are also acting on the heavenly planets. So it's not liberation, but it's the lower stages. You're relieved of the sufferings, the grosser forms of sufferings on this plane. But from where we are, it looks like unlimited happiness. So many people, most religions, as far as my experience is, they do not make a distinction between heaven and the kingdom of God. I'm not aware of it. The only distinction that I'm a little bit aware of is Buddhism, because I've done some, for the purpose of reaching to Chinese people, done a little study on what the Buddhist conception of, like, where you go after this. The general sense that Prabhupada was once asked, where does a perfect Christian go, where does a perfect Buddhist go? And the perfect Christian, this is Rupa Nuga wrote a letter to Prabhupada about that, and Prabhupada said, it's pretty hard to find a perfect Christian. That was the preamble. But if there was such a person, then their destiny would be Brahmaloka. And there in Brahmaloka, become trained in devotional service further, and then as Brahma departs to the spiritual world, to enter the spiritual world. And then the destination of a Buddhist, Prabhupada described, is they enter into the river Viraja if they become perfect. And the river Viraja, from our perspective, it's, in short, it's neither here nor there. There's the material realm, and there's the spiritual realm, and that which divides the spiritual and material realm is the river Viraja. So you're not here, and you're not in Vaikunth either. You're in that space in between. So here's what the Buddhists themselves say, at least the most popular form of Buddhism, this I've learned from some study. It's, hold on to your socks, it's really like shocking. If you follow Buddha's teaching perfectly, it's a two-stop process. The first stop is, they call it the land of pure bliss. And there's a particular form of Buddha, I forget, there's something Buddha, and there you learn how to perfect your life and enter into the realm of nothingness. You go from, you know, illusion to somethingness to nothingness. Nirvana. Like, nothing is. That's the goal. If you're like, you know, really good, you'll enter into nothingness. And in between there's this land of pure bliss. So that nirvana, that conception, is the river Viraja. So where individuality is suspended. note, it's very similar to the discussion yesterday evening about what happens to living entities during cosmic annihilation. They enter into the body of Mahavishnu in the Susupti state. Consciousness is suspended. It's not zero, it's just dormant. Like a seed is dormant. And individuality is dormant. And so it's you're anesthetized for a long time. And because that's not your constitutional position to be anesthetized, what happens? Fall down. Aruya Krishna Param Padam Tada Patantyado Nadmarayush Madangrayaha. One falls from that position. And as our Vedic conception is, at the time of cosmic annihilation, the living entities enter into the body of Mahavishnu. Mahavishnu is in the causal ocean. And these terms, causal ocean and river Viraja, they're interchangeable. That which is not in the spiritual Vaikuntha realm, nor is it in this realm. It's this other position. So, what's the goal of life? You know, these fundamental questions that we're too busy to ask, and they're too difficult to answer, so we don't ask them. We do stuff that's easier. You know, it's hot, get a fan or get some ice cream. We do stuff like that, rather than, like, what's the purpose of life? Why is there creation? That was the question at the Chicago Rath Yatra. It came and asked it again. I want to hear it again. Why is there creation? Why? What's the purpose? What is life? Anyway, to answer these questions properly, there has to be... It's descending through scripture, revealed knowledge through teachers that receive from Krishna in disciplic succession, that knowledge with reference to the scripture. So the sages are helping the king do a little reality check, but they also let him know there's consequences if you don't. The list in text 16 is, you'll spoil the spiritual life of the populace in general, and then you're culpable for that. You'll spoil your life, you'll spoil their life, and the next step is, you'll fall from your position, and your position you're attached to, your opulence, your position as king, you'll lose it. No, I won't lose it. I'm powerful. Where do you drive your power from? Like Kamran Yukashiku. Asking Prahlad, where do you get your power? And Prahlad's answer was, from the same place you do, Dad. From God, from Vishnu. Vishnu! Where is this Vishnu? He's everywhere. Oh, is he in this pillar? There he is, right there. See, Dad, he's right there. So, going back a couple of verses, one gets strength, spiritual strength, to carry out your duties of life. If you're a king, or if you're a housewife, or if you're a cook, or if you're a whatever you are, you get spiritual strength to carry out. So not only knowing what the duties are, the strength to carry them out. And that means the strength to not do something else besides carry them out. And then, you know, reach the goal, and being clear what the goal is and reach the goal. The opportunity is there, and the Bhagavatam is so nicely laying it out. even for this wicked person, King Vena, who chooses to reject it. And so, as they say, he loses his kingdom. He loses his life. But fortunately, the soul is eternal. The soul gets another chance. And we get, Krishna is very kind, we get so many chances, although we're undeserving. We're pretty foolish. But Krishna gives us chance after chance. So best, utilize this one lifetime properly. As best we can. Fully, properly. And these beneficial things that are being described here at the bottom, unlimited happiness, eternal existence with Krishna. That's the inspiration. And the inspiration is not so that we become the enjoyer of that, but that Krishna's happiness is fulfilled. Krishna's happiness is fulfilled. Just like a loving parent. Loving parent wishes the happiness of their child. Their meditation 24/7 is the happiness of their child or children. They do what they do for the happiness of their children. Their happiness is to see their children happy and become good in character and, you know, all those nice things. And the child's happiness is to reciprocate with that which will make my parents happy. It's a relationship. It works. A loving relationship works like that. It's in the real best interest of both parties. At the same time, the real happiness through the medium of that loving relationship is there. So what to speak of the supreme loving personality, who is the source of everything. It's our real position of happiness. Ultimate happiness. Unlimited happiness. Okay, so I'll end there, see if there's any discussion. Yes.
Krishna gives intelligence to drive in the right way. How do we, what should we do in order to get the intelligence?
How do you get there? The last part of chapter 14, Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna asks Krishna the same thing. What does it look like when it's free from the modes of material nature? And most importantly, how do you get there? Mam Chriyovyovacharina Bhakti Yogina Sevate Sagunan Samatityaitan Brahma Vyaya Kalpate. That's how. Avyavachari Bhakti is how. Undivided devotional service is how. So that means we have to keep, like, moment to moment, practicing our moments of life, dedication, using time with dedication to Krishna's service. And undivided means not otherwise. Or another way of saying the same is we have to make ourselves qualified by making our hearts pure. And the means of making our hearts pure is primarily through hearing and chanting. And really absorbing yourself in hearing and chanting. Really absorbing yourself. And then when that's done, then that consciousness will carry with you into your activities. So then you'll know how to properly apply the right thing in the right way by that, through the medium of that purity. Krishna will guide you. And that's the position of a pure devotee. Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam. Bhaktir Uchite. By definition, bhakti is where the senses are fully engaged in the service of the master of the senses. And then the earlier part of that verse is where I'm freed from designation, sarva upadhi vinir muktam, tat paratrena nirmalam. Nirmala means without mala, without contamination. And part of the contamination is our false ego that says, I am such and such. Designation. And one who thinks like that, that's part of our contamination. It's not who are we? If we're not those designations, Gopi Bhartur Padakamali or Adasa Dasan or Das, that's who we are. The servant of the servant of the servant, that's who we are. So when we have that conception of who we are, servant of the servant of the servant, freed from designations of I am this kind of person, I need this, I want that, blah, 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 then our heart becomes a fit place to be guided by the Supreme Lord. How to please Him in each action of our life. It's just spontaneously happening that way. That's the position of a pure devotee. And we should strive for that, or try to qualify ourselves for that. What a nice position, just being guided by Krishna. Just saying yes. Wow. That's the path that's being provided for us, or to us. Anything else? Yes. Yeah, it's a nice definition, huh?
May I ask you to repeat?
Sure. Endeavor with intelligence in Krishna consciousness is enthusiasm. No, like this plus this equals that. Endeavor with intelligence, like, you know, this kind, not the material kind, spiritual kind, like the kind that Krishna gives to understand how to reach Him, to those who are constantly engaged in His service. As the verse, read it in Bhagavad Gita 10:10. Dadami Bodhiyogam Tam. That kind of intelligence. That's enthusiasm. Meaning, so it's discussed, we discussed it yesterday, no, evening before yesterday, Tuesday evening. But it's in Nectar of Instruction, text number three, this definition that I just gave, where if we contact that which is pleasing to Krishna, it's enthusing. Well, the endeavor that one makes is not an ordinary endeavor. It's a blissful, cannot be checked by any obstacle kind of endeavor. It's what is described in the first canto, chapter 2, as supersedity. Prasanna means happiness, and suprasanna is great happiness. And atma suprasanna, where the soul is completely satisfied. It's when it's described when there isn't some material motivation. If there isn't material motivation, why do you do something? For the pleasure of someone else. Love for Krishna. And then there's nothing that can stop that. Ahoituki pratyata yatma supersedati. Completely satisfying. That's enthusiasm. Not created by circumstance. Well, when I have the right circumstance, then I can be enthusiastic. And when there's an obstacle, I become discouraged. That's not enthusiasm. That's not the enthusiasm that's described and that's recommended by Rupa Goswami. It's another kind. And then one can be perpetually enthusiastic. And the unfavorable circumstances become good opportunities for more enthusiasm. Because, oh great, here's an obstacle. Krishna's giving me some very nice service. And with enthusiasm, let me address this. It's only possible, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in his commentary on this section, says that it's not possible without a spiritual conception of life, or say the opposite. With a material conception of life, sustained enthusiasm isn't going to happen. It'll be unsteady, stop-start. Anishtata means unsteady. So we have to, like the previous question, we have to make ourselves eligible for that by purification. Hearing and chanting will help us establish in our heart a spiritual conception of life, myself, and the goal, and be inspired by that and connect to that, and then that's enthusiasm. Unstoppable. Not circumstantial, unstoppable, transcendental enthusiasm. That's Krishna consciousness. It doesn't mean that, for example, when Prabhupada reached the Boston Harbor and he wrote that wonderful poem, he knew what the challenge was. He wasn't oblivious, that kind of, blind enthusiasm. He saw the challenge and he spoke about it and wrote about it, and then he saw the means to address the challenge. He cited some of these same verses from the Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 2. Krishna's going to help me. If Krishna helps me, then the mountain can be climbed. Or the blind man can see the stars in the sky. A fool can understand the conclusive truths of the Vedas if Krishna's kind. Krishna's kindness will come through. Then that's the impossible becomes possible. The obstacle is gone, or just another opportunity for service. And I maintain enthusiasm throughout. That's Krishna consciousness. That's the opportunity. Because life has its challenges, as we all know. And if it's not one thing, it's 10 things. Life has its challenges. And to maintain enthusiasm through those challenges, as opportunities given by Krishna to purify myself, to engage in some service, somehow, although my capacity is very tiny, and still remain enthusiastic, fully depending upon Krishna. That's the life that we're being given. Something else? Yes. And we should be patient. We also hear that, right? Urgently be patient. The patience is for the result. And the urgency is in the sense of service. So while it's a gradual process, the purification is gradual. This doesn't take away from the sense of urgency. Damodar Pandit's question about, the race. Tick, tick. Tick, tick. Well, I'll get to it later. Tick, tick. And then, our lives, the youthful energy of life is gone, and we're limping around. the basket case is being taken care of by other people because, you know, we didn't use our time properly. So it's there's a sense of urgency. Even in that sense of urgency, it's gradual because there's this big mountain of contamination. Remember from the Festival of the Holy Name last year, 3 miles thick of dust. Remember that example? So Chaitra Dharpana Marjanam, I got a lot of Marjanam cleansing to do because it's so thick, so gradual. But that doesn't take away my enthusiasm, although it's gradual. And then the third is patience, dhairyat. Krishna is there. I have full confidence in Krishna. And he can make it go quickly, he can make it go slowly, he can do whatever he likes. He's free. I'm patient. I'm fully trusting in Krishna. So enthusiasm and patience aren't contradictory. And gradual is also not contradictory. It's part of the spiritual reality. Part of how we can work with the spiritual conception. Whoever follows
the religious principles,
follows religious principles.
Even by horse mind from the Raksha.
Yeah.
So it says the Madhavam, they will be eligible to the heavenly planets.
They have what?
They will be eligible to the heavenly planets.
Eligible for the heavenly planets.
So in the Madhavam mostly always says to the heavenly planets, but you don't say going to the heavenly planets.
I don't know if that's true. Have you done a study to see the percentages of how many times it speaks of the heavenly planets versus Vaikuntha? What's your point?
My question is, so far, whatever I hear, I didn't read the whole Bhagavad Gita, but mostly it says, if you do the right thing,
it has to. What's your question? You're repeating yourself. What's your question? It depends on who you're addressing, isn't it? The qualification of the audience determines how the speaker speaks. They're speaking to a wicked person. At best, he wants to enjoy. And you can enjoy better in the heavenly planets. So do like this, you get more enjoyment. But because it is the Bhagavatam, there's also this description that Bodhi, that's the eligibility for Vaikuntha. And happiness that's unlimited, that's Vaikuntha. But you know, such a person doesn't have the capacity to even conceive of that. So, according to the audience, one speaks. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. Prabhupada Ki Jai.